The Spirit, Life of the Church and Life of the Soul, by Father Brian W. Gary. In a few short weeks, the Church will celebrate Pentecost. Pentecost not only introduces the faithful to the all-too-neglected third person of the Holy Trinity, but also touches on the mystery of the Church itself. The beauty of the feast invites the Christian to meditate on this in an even deeper way, knowing all the while that the full depths of the Spirit and His role in the Church can never be exhausted by our mortal minds. This makes Newman's meditations on the Paraclete all the more profound. What theologians futilely try to grasp in a profusion of words, Newman captures with an economy of words that never loses sight of the mystery before which he stands. Newman simultaneously maintains the balance between a God who is infinite, uncircumscribable, and yet intimately present to the world he created. Newman begins, "Through thee the whole material universe hangs together and consists, remains in its place, and moves internally in the order and reciprocity of its several parts. Through thee the earth was brought into its present state, and was matured through its 6 days to be a habitation for man. The same Spirit directs the world, ordering all things perfectly, and yet the Spirit's ordering of all things does not end on the cosmic level, leaving creatures to their own devices. He even directs the work of salvation, showing that our eternal welfare is of his utmost concern. It is by thee that sinners are turned into saints. It is by thee the Church is refreshed and strengthened, and champions start forth, and martyrs are carried on to their crown. Through thee new religious orders, new devotions in the Church come into being, new countries are added to the faith. New manifestations and illustrations are given to the ancient apostolic creed." Thus, Newman shows us that the Spirit's dual work in establishing the Church and pouring life into our souls are in no way contradictory. Indeed, they are the same reality. The Spirit builds up the Church by breathing life into our souls that we might be His witnesses. Indeed, Newman's most tender words to the Spirit are reserved for this contemplation. He lived firsthand the reality that the Spirit has brought him into the Church, and not by any merit of his own. "I adore thee, O Almighty Lord, the Paraclete, because thou, in thy infinite compassion, hast brought me into this Church, the work of thy supernatural power. I had no claim on thee for so wonderful a favor over anyone else in the whole world. There were many men far better than I by nature, gifted with more pleasing natural gifts, and less stained with sin. Yet thou, in thy inscrutable love for me, hast chosen me and brought me into thy fold. Thou hast a reason for everything thou dost." Certainly few of us are in the same position as Newman, who had a high-profile conversion. Many of us are cradle Catholics who never strayed far from the Church. Still others of us have strayed, only to find ourselves drawn back. Still others of us, like Newman, found our way into the one fold of Christ after years of seeking rest in other pastures. Yet what joins our experience to Newman's is precisely how personally the Spirit speaks into our lives. He draws us ever nearer, and at times imperceptibly. Newman's conversion was eminently public, yet that does not for a moment diminish how personal it was. Still too, for us, wherever we find ourselves, the Spirit draws us ever deeper into communion with Him. Could not Newman's next words easily be applied to us? He professes, "I know there must be an all-wise reason, as we speak in human language, for thy choosing me and not another. But I know that that reason was something external to myself. I did nothing towards it. I did everything against it. I did everything to thwart thy purpose, and thus I owe all to thy grace." How many times do we work actively against God's grace, brushing aside the promptings of the Spirit? And yet the Spirit does not abandon us as a failed project. He knows our purpose even when we do not, or prefer our plans above His. Newman knows this too. The Spirit will not be frustrated, and as such does not simply give us good suggestions. Rather, he says, "Thou hast from the first entered into my soul and taken possession of it. Thou hast made it thy temple. Thou dwellest in me by thy grace in an ineffable way, uniting me to thyself in the whole company of angels and saints. Nay, as some have held, thou art present in me not only by thy grace, but by thy eternal substance. Newman understands so profoundly the simultaneous majesty and tenderness of the Holy Spirit, the work of creation, guiding the universe, establishing the church, can never be divorced from his work of making his dwelling within our baptized and confirmed souls. Newman's response is the proper one, humility. In a world that is often too proud to consider that God, if he even exists, would condescend to his creation, Newman responds with wonder and awe. How and why should the God of the universe enter his soul? Newman so powerfully captures this reality, and his restraint in words does not crowd out the Spirit, but only gives him more room to speak to us. We could hardly find more fitting meditations on the Spirit as the Church enters into the final half of the Easter season. Let us learn to see in Newman's words to the Holy Spirit, heart speaking to heart, our own story. Let us praise in Newman's words the same Spirit who orders all things, establishes his church, and in these last days has deigned to gather us into his fold. As the church prepares for Pentecost, how can we renew our relationship with the Holy Spirit? How is the Holy Spirit calling us deeper into a relationship with the church that we, under his guidance, can accomplish his purposes? With Newman, we can, in all humility, profess not to know the Spirit's plans for us, but we do know that he created all things, established the church, and in his providence called us into her fold. At the very least, may we not resist his plans.